Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9. Here at Channel 9 Live, we have tons of stuff. I have my paper here. Let me tell you what we've got lined up for the next hour and a half. We're going to talk about AI and some other things with here my good colleague, Steve Guggenheimer. We're going to talk about Project Emma. If you were watching the keynote and there was some onions being cut and you got a little teary-eyed, we're going to talk to her and her colleague about how they made this awesome apparatus to help. And then we're going to look at Azure Database for Postgres, SQL and MySQL. So please stay tuned. We have tons of live coverage all the way to 7:30 Pacific time here tonight. And I'm here with my good friend. How you doing, Stephen?
Good, man. How you doing?
Or as you are known to be called, Mr. Googs.
Googs.
Where did that come about? Is this your last name too long or something?
Well, it was an old story. So when I ran the OEM division, there was Steve Ballmer running the company and Steven Sinofsky running Windows. And I was running OEM. You don't want to be the third Steve in that loop.
No.
So we just switched over to Googs full time at that point.
Do we just hire a lot of Steves and Scotts at Microsoft, or what's the deal?
Yeah, clearly one too many. That's why I'm Googs now.
My name is going to be changed to either Steve or Scott soon. I'm not sure.
Well, given you start with an S, you're okay.
I'm okay.
You're in the club.
I'm in the clear. Okay. So tell us about, there's kind of a transition for you that's going on. Let's talk about what you did before.
Yep.
And then talk about, there's some stuff that you're going to be showing here this week on that, and then let's talk about your new role. Let's start with your old role.
Sweet. Well, look, been working with developers and ISVs for about the last 4.5, almost 5 years now, partnering with John Shuchuk and the rest of the team to manage our developer evangelism group. It's been an awesome experience. We actually, for this year, we did a day 3 keynote. So John and I spent probably a couple hours in the studio with developers, startups, developers from all walks of life, doing a little bit of, you know, show and tell, a little bit of demo. But this is the beginning of the transition. Build is my final event as the head of DX. It's getting shared out now. John's going to still be there. Charlotte Yarkoni, who works in Scott Guthrie's organization, she's taking part of the rollover with John Shuchuk, and then part of the ISV works over with another guy named Ron Huddleston. So it's all going to keep moving forward, but I get to go do something new.
But now you're working on something that is a huge passion of mine. And I'm going to tell you about this because, for me, AI is probably one of the most important things. I was talking about AI before it was cool. Like, I started talking about machine learning with .NET devs in C#, probably in 2008. And now you're moving into an organization that does a lot of AI. Why don't you tell us about that?
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not going to say super excited because that's a way overused term. But I'm excited. Look, I've been working on ecosystem for almost 10 years now, and to get back into the product area, it's incredible. And the team is the AI in our team, so it's artificial intelligence and research. Harry Shum runs it. Yeah, I've been working with him for the last month and a half on his keynote. That was this morning. And it's really about bringing AI to life for developers. And Build was sort of our kickoff for the new organization and what the team's up to. They've been at it. You want to talk about somebody who's been at it a long time, that's Harry.
Right.
He's been at it, you know, his whole career.
Yeah, he wins, clearly.
He wins hands down. But we've been working in, you know, research for years. I mean, the team's been working on incredible technologies, early natural language processing. I think my first demo was in 2002 with XD on stage at CES with Bill. And so as a company, we've been working on for a long time, but the cloud is giving us that scale that allows us to bring AI to all developers and let them infuse it into the stuff they're working on. So, cool area.
So the question then that I have is, why is it such a hot area starting now? Because in Satya's keynote, he kind of presaged the shift, right, of what's going on. Why is it important now? You alluded to it a little bit with the cloud stuff, but let's get into that a little bit more.
Well, I think there's sort of three things. Having the ability to have compute and data storage and the ability to work with data at scale is incredibly important because this just takes a lot of compute capability to start with.
Right.
And so having that in the cloud now means every developer can have access to it versus having to build the types of data centers essentially you'd need to do it on your own. So it can move out of the realm of the research houses or just the big, you know, few folks to giving every developer an opportunity. The second thing is the advancement of the algorithms. Some of the work we've been doing with cognitive services, you know, Harry talked about the fact that, you know, 2 years ago there were 4 of them. You know, last year we were up to, I think, 13 or so. This year we're at 29, but we're also making it so you can customize them. They're not fixed. And so the growth in the algorithms, all the work Joseph Sorosh and his team are doing on the machine learning side, the tool side, the work we're doing with the data lake, you know, Scott talked about Cosmos, and then the fact that there's so much more data out there. All the work going on, I think Satya said this morning that in the last 2 years we've created 90% of the data that's available, and at the rate it's growing. So if you look at sort of IoT devices and social networks, the combination of, you know, really incredible compute, you know, capacity that everybody can have access to, you know, broad sets of data, which you need for training models, and then the work that's going on with the algorithms around this so that you can actually do unique things, those three things are giving us the opportunity to sort of go from the research halls to the mainstream.
And I remember when I was doing research, we had to actually rent, like I had to go to the computer lab and be like, hey, can I have between 3 and 4 in the morning, you know, because I was low on the totem pole. But now you're saying with the cloud, everyone can do this kind of thing.
Yeah, and that was, you know, Satya's key point, and that's what Harry was building off of. With the cloud, you know, Satya talked about cloud, you know, sort of scale, and then edge computing, mm-hmm. the combination of cloud and edge. So there's so much more data being created at the edge. The ability to do some intelligent effort or some intelligent work at the edge, that was sort of the video scenario he showed, and then connecting that with the cloud and the just incredible compute capacity. And again, it wouldn't be possible if not for the work that Scott and the Azure team and frankly other companies in the same area have been doing in terms of the scale that you can operate at and the data work. I mean, the incredible ability to scale data, to sort of work on data real time, all the tools that are out there, all the languages, mm-hmm. That's the thing that unlocks the tool set.
That's amazing. And I could geek out all day, but this is all about you. Make sure you submit your questions in so we can talk to Googs about AI. So here's, you kind of alluded to this, but I want to get into this a little bit deeper. Yep. What is Microsoft doing in AI that's unique or different that developers should start to take note right now?
Yeah, and I think there's three areas we're really focused on. The first is that notion of bringing AI to all developers.
Right.
We've been known as a company forever, essentially, as a provider of tools and platforms. So I often say we're plumbers. Trying to bring AI plumbing or AI platform and tools to everyone. You know, cognitive services are one example of that. The bot framework, I mean, part of the history of the bot framework is we were building some bots, and our team's working on it. It turned out we had to have a dev team for each channel we wanted to bring it to life.
Oh, wow.
So if we were building a bot, at this time we were working on some of the early ones in China, the Chow Ice and Rena in Japan, we'd have to build our own tool set for if I wanted to do it in Kik versus Skype versus on Messenger. And so the notion of having to do that ourselves, we're like, we should just build a toolkit so that everybody who's building a bot can access all these channels. Mm-hmm. And so that ability to bring tools to developers, whether it's cognitive services and now the ability to train cognitive services, whether it's the bot framework, whether it's sort of new things like adaptive cards that were announced today,
right.
Making Cortana accessible to everyone. One of the things we've been working on is Cortana Skills.
Right.
And I'm bummed, we had a video, we've got a bunch of developers working on Cortana Skills, and we had a video teed up for the keynote, but the timing got tight, so that'll be online a little bit later.
Awesome.
But this notion of bringing AI to all developers through the combination of the cloud to start with, and then a set of tools specific to them. The second thing is, frankly, if you're going to build a platform, you got to use it.
Right.
Right. So Windows is Office, Azure, you can talk about the work we've been doing with our own Dynamics business. And so one of the things with AI in the platform is using it ourselves. So we're infusing it into our own products. We showed off just only one thing from Office today, which was the Office PowerPoint Translator. But throughout Office, whether it's PowerPoint or whether it's Excel or Word.
Including Dynamics, too.
Dynamics as well. Bing is, of course, built on AI.
Sure.
That's where a lot of the original cognitive services come from. But that PowerPoint translator, incredibly powerful. The ability to sort of sit there in one language, and speak. I'm off to Japan for Decode, plug for Decode, mm-hmm. The week after this. And so, if you've ever been in, Japan or any other country where they're doing translation, for me, super hard, because what the number one thing they want for me to do? Slow down and speak
right.
at a pace where the real-time translator.
Let's do this the whole interview, because people are going to love it.
I'm going batty in my mind, but it's one step above having the non-real-time translation. Mm-hmm. So the notion of having a tool that will do the translation automatically from one language to another, that is an incredibly powerful tool. And we've done it with Skype, but bringing it to life in PowerPoint's another good example. In fact, there was one of the new cognitive services release. We'll actually sort of take a video, separate it out, do the translation, do the transcription. If you think about real-time closed captioning.
Right.
So infusing in our into our own products is powerful. And then the third is ultimately building solutions. One of the areas that I'm focused on in Harry's team is this ability to build solutions on top of AI. It's one thing to build a bot. You can do some cool stuff on the front end. It's another thing to replace or try and replace the wrong word, but augment your entire call center I mean, when somebody types in my password doesn't work, or somebody types in, hey, I turned on the computer and I clicked these three buttons and something didn't happen. Being able to sort of sort all of that out, use machine learning to take all of our knowledge base articles, all of the calls we ever get,
right,
sort them into a deep neural network, be able to go search for terms, be able to bring that up to an end user. If you can't find the answer, being able to hand it off to an agent smoothly, give them the information. If they get the information and they answer the question some other way, retrain the network over time, that's a real solution. And so that ability to go from building blocks to infusing it into our products to building solutions, that's the journey we're on. And that was the conversation this morning with Harry.
And that's awesome, because the thing I love about particularly our platform components is we have everything to just guess, just tell us what's in this picture kind of calls,
right,
to now you can actually build your own deep neural network models. So if someone's a developer and they're like, you know what, I wanna get involved with this, what are some suggestions that you have in order to make sort of AI a reality for them?
Well, a couple of things. First off, we tried to aggregate everything we're doing at the show at Microsoft.com/AI. So first and foremost.
That's awesome.
Not to get lost. We tried to put all the sample links to all the sample code, everything on GitHub up there. I'm not sure we got it perfect, but at least a singular starting point.
Right.
Look, part of this is just about figuring out what you want to do. I mean, I get these questions like, you know, we're going to go develop, you know, AI apps, or I'm going to create AI developers. It's more about infusing AI into the things you do today. So figure out, you know, what business solution are you working on? You know, what problem are you trying to solve? How are you trying to augment the work you're doing, taking advantage of AI? And so as a developer, you know, simple things like starting off with the cognitive services just to see what's possible, as opposed to heading into, you know, using R and doing your own, sort of building your own cognitive services,
right,
or building your own capabilities. It depends a little on your background. If, you know, if you come out of the database world, you know, starting to play with machine learning, starting to play with some of the tools again. And so for me, it's really hard to say, hey, go do this one thing. It's more about go immerse yourself into what the building blocks are. Start at the data level, then you work your way into these new services offerings, the cognitive services, the bot framework, some of the other pieces that are coming out, and then think about what solution you're trying to build. You know, in DX, we've been doing Hackfest for a year now,
sure,
on the bot framework and cognitive services. You know, 80% of those things end up not going anywhere because people don't actually have a plan in mind. So if you want to go play, go play. If you want to go build something, figure out what business process you're trying to improve or what thing you're trying to augment that you're building, and then go be very targeted and very specific. Because this notion of, quote, building an AI app, you can do awesome stuff on a whiteboard. You're not going to end up with anything that's usable.
I mean, to me, saying I'm going to build an AI app is like, I'm going to cook with salt. Yeah, but what are you making, right?
That's a great analogy.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to borrow that one.
Oh, but please do. Borrow. I mean, I've looked at AI for a long time, and people say, oh, well, you need to go put AI in it. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Right.
And I like the way you're saying is, if you have a problem, see what your problem is, see what solution you're trying to do, and then start looking at the cognitive services that we have, because maybe the solution's already done.
Right.
You don't need to go and build your own kind of model as well.
Yeah, this is really a learning pattern, because one of the other things that I think, you know, most software development, you start with an architect, you come up with your architecture, you put the devs on it, you come up with a plan, and then you go and build. This is more around build a model, use it for a while, see how it works, retrain the model, right? Use these new capabilities, and you're continually iterating. And if you're good at it, the iterations will get better and more rapid, and they'll sort of produce results. But on some of these solutions that we worked on, so if I take the call center example again, you know, you start off with a whole set of articles and, you know, a decision tree, and you start working, and it's months of iteration. You get some progress in the beginning, you feel pretty good, but then there's three more months of retraining the algorithms, retraining the models to actually have it produce the kind of results where you say, okay, that was actually worth the investment. The front end where you feel good, that's easy. The ROI for the actual business, there's real work involved there.
Right.
And it's a combination of the tools, experience, people actually know how to do AI work, and the data to go with it, and using those three things. When you put those three things together, any developer can make progress. When you spend enough time and energy on it, you can make sort of real significant changes in specific business processes, but it's not a one and done. And it's not a, here's my architecture, here's my dev plan, here's my milestones, and I'm out.
Awesome. Well, we have some questions. I've been hogging your time.
Okay.
Can I use Microsoft AI in developing my PHP application?
Yeah, there's no reason my PHP application. Yes. I mean, it's sort of the question is, can you use the tools against different languages and sort of different models? Yes, it depends on which ones and what things you're trying to do. But there's no prerequisite that you can't use PHP.
Cognitive services effectively is a REST call.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep, they're all REST calls.
Okay, so, awesome.
That one's pretty easy.
Easy. Next question. The Microsoft Cognitive Services looks complex. What is the main development platform for that?
Well, the underpinnings for that, we did it all through Bing when we were building Bing. And so as we built each one of those, the backgrounds and what they're built on are slightly different, but that's why we use REST endpoints for all of them.
Okay.
So they're actually very simple to program against. They're very simple to use. If you can program against a REST endpoint, you can create your own. If you build your own models, it's very easy to work with.
You can literally in Bash do a curl call
a
picture.
If you watched the demo this morning, I think it took her two lines of code to sort of use the custom cognitive service, the ones that she had redone.
So awesome.
That was, I'm trying to remember the name now.
Yeah.
The vision one.
Right. Oh, you're talking about the one where they put the pictures in and retrain the leaves?
Brain, yeah, I lose track of all the names.
That's an amazing demo. Like, I don't think you understand. I started with, my research was in machine translation.
Oh, nice.
Back in 2008, 6, whatever. And this was a time where it's like this is a solved problem now. But for us, it wasn't, back then. And I was like, when I'm watching these demos, I'm like, this is amazing.
I'm feeling bad now, though, because when I went to school, it was like 94, and we're using Fortran and a VAX cluster.
Oh.
So you just dated me really bad there.
Ooh.
Though Satya's nice phrase age is associated with, what was it? The rapid growth of technology is inversely proportional to the hair that we all have.
Well, someone did call me out on my hairline. I'm just saying.
Yep.
So here's another interesting thing that I want to bring up. While your questions, obviously, I'm still going to answer them, but it feels like the way we interact with computers or computation or things that are computer-like is a lot different because you start talking about bots and then you start talking about Cortana skills. Tell us a little bit about how that interaction with computers is requiring the use of AI.
Well, I might flip it around a little bit. One of the things that people talk about when they talk about AI, what is AI? And so, starting with a broad set of data and being able to sort of ingest that data and then reason over it to make proactive decisions is sort of the second piece. But the third is, how do you interact with it? And these new paradigms for interaction, one model is a bot as a front end, as opposed to building an app for everything. We all have the long tail of apps. Like, if I want to know if my plane's on time, a bot is a much easier, a question and answer conversation's a much easier way to do that. The other place you can look at HoloLens. Like, look at sort of the different input modalities and ways that we'll interact. And so this notion that everything is an app, and the second part of it is that we have to learn the way the computer works. Being able to have a conversation with a computer or being able to use gestures or use a HoloLens and interact with the environment, it's much more about moving away from us sort of learning the way the computer talks or the way to interact with the computer to the computer and really the computing surfaces around us learning how to interact with us. And that's that notion of taking that last step. AI is interesting as a technology or a capability, but if you have to interact with it, and know how to interact with it, it's not really AI. That making it natural for the end user, that's the last step. And that's why bots been a big focus. That's why the speech has been a big focus. That's where HoloLens has been a big focus. All of these new models for interaction, they are the last step in making AI real for everybody.
That's awesome. More questions from Argo. Can you talk more about how the cognitive services APIs can be customized?
Sure. There's a couple of them now. So speech is one and photos is another, where you can basically create your own model. So you can start with our broad cognitive services, take speech, but then you can train it. We have a very simple tool for training it yourself. You can add your own words to it. You can add your own speech to it.
Right.
And you can use that to train your simple model, then create your own REST endpoint against that particular, basically a new cognitive service for you. And so you can do that. That's what the guys in the video for Starship did.
Yeah.
And that's what we did with the plant. So originally, the cognitive service, if you showed it the leaf we had, it would say leaf or, might say branch or something.
Right.
The ability to add your own set of images and create your own front end was able to say, okay, that's a eucalyptus leaf or that's a Douglas fir pine. And so that ability to create your own models, there's a tool that we built. It has the training. It has the ability to retrain. You basically upload your images in this particular case. You run the model. It gives you a first cut.
Right.
And then you retrain over time.
And that's the same thing with Lewis, for example.
Like Lewis is the speech version.
Yeah, you submit text to Lewis, and if it gets it wrong, it will store it, and you can go in there and say, oh, no, here's where you got it wrong, and it learns.
And it constantly retrain it, make it better. Powerful tool. Powerful tool.
Love it. Here's another question. You keep talking a lot about democratizing AI. What does that even mean? Yes, we are talking to devs and marketing people, which we are not, like to talk about democratization of blah. So why don't we translate that into actually real speak? What does that mean?
Yeah, look, the ability to give developers access to the tools to use AI capabilities in their applications or their services or their solutions, that's what that means. It says taking the platform and making it available for a very broad set of developers using tools that they're familiar with.
And I mean, that's awesome. Democratization literally means it's not just for the people that went to school for a long time to do
it. Yeah, it's funny because I'm afraid somewhere in our past we're partly responsible. I'm pretty sure that in the history of Microsoft we've talked about democratizing capabilities, but now I wish we hadn't in some ways because it gets overused. But
yeah,
look, making it so that every developer can take advantage of AI, that doesn't mean every developer will or should, but that notion that the tools that I'm used to using, whether it's Visual Studio, whether it's the languages that I'm used to, whether it's working with SQL, all of the basic tool sets and languages I'm used to, whether it's Python or somebody asked about PHP earlier,
right.
It's about being able to use what I know and add AI to it versus having to learn something completely different.
I see. Okay, next question. How fast is AI could replace human work? Like IT jobs. There's always this fear.
Yeah.
Like I remember, I mean, there is even a term for this, Luddites. I don't know if that's a term where like the horseshoe makers were really upset the cars were coming out.
Right, right.
Tell me about that. What do you think?
Well, one of the things we talk about is AI augmenting human ingenuity. Because the truth of the matter is, it tends to be a win-win. There's always been this concern when new technologies come out that it replaces people. So they worried when barcode scanners came out that there'd be less checkers. Turns out there's more checkers today because the overall market for supermarkets and sales has grown. So at each one of these sort of changes in time, folks do worry. But in this case, it's all about augmenting humans. So whether it's farming and being able to have people focus on, the work of what goes in the soil versus mapping, what the fields look like, whether it's the speech recognition, whether it's the, enclosed captioning. In all of the areas where we think about AI, it's that augmenting human ingenuity so humans can focus on the problems and the solutions that matter the most and not have to do what I'll say in some ways is some of the mundane work of doing the pieces over and over again that a computer can do. And I think when computers came into most businesses, whether it's banking, they thought, ATMs. When ATMs came out, they thought, okay, we'll need less tellers. There'll be, fewer banks. Turns out there are more branches of banks today because when the ATMs came out, it freed up the capital so they could open more branches. And so in many ways, we look at this as augmenting human capability, and it doesn't matter the area. It's about enabling humans to do more and not taking their jobs away.
I love the idea that you're saying that it's not replacing humans, it's augmenting
them. Yeah.
And things will get better. And like I say, I welcome our robot overlords so that when they watch this video in the future, they know I've always been on their team.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Terminator.
He jokes for that one. Even the robotics as assistants, elder care or people who in need, there's a ton of areas where you can augment human capability as opposed to replacing it. And we're seeing that drive. I don't know if you got the Emma folks coming on later
yes.
on. There's a part of AI involved in that, and that notion of taking, someone with Parkinson's and making them, able to write better or be able to interact better. And last year we showed the demo where the person who can't see was able to know what was going on around them.
It was amazing.
These abilities to augment human capability and help people is amazing. And so the trick is to find the right balance, but not be fearful of the replacement side, because that's where we want to focus on enabling people to do more.
Nice. The next question. In your blog today, you mentioned moving into AI and research. What will you be doing?
I think I'm going to be on Channel 9. My blog just posted for those that missed the beginning. I've been in the evangelism side for 4.5 years. I'm switching into Harry Shum's world. I'm going to work on the AI side, and I would say my job is 70-30. 30% of my time is doing broad AI work across the company, helping us stitch together the conversation. So, for example, if you're a developer, you can go to a single site and find all the information.
Right.
If we look at the SDKs and the APIs today, we have some work today to do to make them a little bit cleaner, a little easier to work with. So doing that cross-company work to make sure that As a company, we're delivering AI to all developers in a you know, consistent fashion, or as consistent as possible. And then most of my time will be spent on building real solutions. So when I say real solutions, solutions that take hard problems. So if we think about, again, the call center example, or you know, being able to do things with marketing and sales, places where businesses use tool sets, where AI can help augment those and make them hopefully better or more efficient, which is that combination of data, unique data, whether that's sort of Bing and LinkedIn from the outside world, or your company's data, or the Microsoft Graph data. That ability to use data with real AI skill sets, part of our engineering team is a research team that's focused on AI, and bringing those together to solve solutions for businesses, that's the bulk of my time.
I mean, that's amazing. And we have about, they're telling me I have 2 minutes left. That's okay. What the clock says. You talked a lot about what devs can do now.
Yep.
You talked about how AI is actual real thing that devs can actually implement today. Let's talk about the next year and in the future. What should developers be doing in order to harness the power of AI in their applications?
Well, I mean, it all starts with data. So if you're on the data side of the house, obviously being able to ingest the data, you know, get access to the data, clean the data. There's just a ton of work to do on the data side, because almost every project we start with, half of the challenge is the data side.
Dirty data.
And so that's if you're anywhere involved with that, that's one piece. If you're a developer outside of it, I think spending a little time to see what's possible and then what you might want to use, because trying to do everything doesn't work very well. And it turns out, again, the researchers are in short supply, the people who know sort of the AI techniques and how to do this work. And so taking the focus on the thing you want to do, again, back to the business solution or the area you're focused on, figuring out what's out there, and then being focused and getting your hands dirty, I'd start there. And then I try and figure out, okay, what problem am I trying to solve? Because this notion that I'm just going to go and use AI and magic's going to happen, it's like any other piece of software. There's a little bit more work involved with that. This one is sort of a new way to think about sort of infusing what you do, not replacing it, not redoing it in a completely different manner. It's how do you augment it with these capabilities.
Awesome. So last 30 seconds, why don't you give me where people can go to get started and even start to think about all this stuff. You said Microsoft.
There's two things. Microsoft.com, WAC AI, that's the first one. And then if you actually go to the Azure website, if you go to Azure Cognitive Services, those are the two places I'd start. But one of the things we try to do with Microsoft AI, which went live today, is to give you one starting point. You can get all the links to the platforms. You can get all the links to the work we're doing in our own products, so those Office demos that we talked about, Cortana, Dynamics. And we're talking a little bit about the business solutions there and how people can actually build real solutions. So I'd start there. I'd watch all the videos from Build. I think there's 3 Cortana sessions and 2 Cognitive Services sessions. Joseph Sirosh has an entire track. I think he's got a keynote earlier. Go, go, go.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Yep.
Thanks so much for watching. Coming up next, Project Emma, empowering people with Parkinson's. Please stay tuned and ask your questions. We will be right back after this break.